Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. More political tensions in Senegal over the postponement of February's elections.
For the first time, all the trade unions made a statement asking for no postponement for the election. The Association of the Imam and Ulemas of Senegal also made a statement criticizing the government.
Zambia's president offers formal employment to all volunteers at cholera centers. New ADF rebels attack in eastern DRC. Community activists in Mozambique use a mobile application to help tuberculosis patients get medication. In Liberia, the scramble for government jobs in the new Joseph Boakai administration is intensifying.
You see, initially, every country, we have one million ministerial position. Then after that, you will go around again. But unfortunately, Grand Bassa got four. The vote from Grand Bassa and the vote from Nimba, which is more higher.
Those stories plus our Black History Month presentation are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Senegal's capital, Dakar, was said to be relatively calm on Monday, but political analyst Ibrahima Kan says there were many reactions from trade union and religious groups criticizing President Macky Sall's abrupt decision to postpone the February 25, 2024 presidential election. Meanwhile, the country's parliament was meeting late Monday to come up with a legal justification for the president's move. But without debate, political analyst Kan tells me the opposition had demanded a debate.
They were about to discuss the bill, and then those who decided to present the bill wanted the bill to be adopted without any debate. That has created a kind of blockage because the opposition took the floor and said there will not be any vote without any debate. The Speaker of the Parliament left the place, and now probably he's trying to discuss with the security forces what to do, because the kind of incident happened in the past. So I think maybe the same scenario will happen again. But all this is just damaging the image, not only of our parliament, of our democratic system, and at the end of the country itself.
So let me understand. You are saying that some people want a debate.
The bill that is going to, it's a constitutional bill.
Yes.
And its aim is to do two things: to postpone the election for 6 months, and then during that same period allow the president to stay in power until the election of his successor. Now, is this problematic? Because according to the constitution itself, the provision regarding the duration of the tenure of the president cannot be changed. The question is, how can we prolong without changing the duration of the term of the president?
In the meantime, there was high tension pertaining to opposition protests and some steps that the government has taken. What can you tell us what happened so far on Monday?
Well, the city itself on Monday was very, very calm. In many areas of the city, children didn't go to school. There was no public transport in the buses of Dakar didn't circulate in the city. The traffic was really fluid. I think people just decided to stay at home and to see what was happening. A lot of security forces on the street. But there was no big violence because people were now trying to find out what next from the government. And what we also seen today is a number of reactions. Reaction of trade unions. For the first time, all the trade unions made a statement asking for no postponement for the election. The Association of the Imam and Ulemas of Senegal also made a statement criticizing the government for taking up this measure and also for putting the country in a very difficult situation that could be avoided, and even criticized ECOWAS for not really upholding the regional principle about election and other stuff. So there is a kind of almost unanimity in the country against any postponement of the election. But still, the parliament is trying to go ahead and the government is not saying anything. Maybe one last point, which is really an important one. The decree that the president apparently used to stop the election process, that decree normally should have been co-signed with the prime minister. But according to many sources, the prime minister didn't sign the document and the document was not published. Now, people are even raising, because that's an important aspect of it, because if there is no decree, why people are doing all of this? Elections should go ahead.
Ibrahima Khan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. In Liberia, the scramble for government jobs in the new Joseph Boakai administration is intensifying. Last week, Unity Party Chairman Luther Tapper led a protest in front of President Boakai's residence because he had not been appointed. On Sunday, Senator Brent Johnson took to the pulpit to say his Nimba County region deserved between 5 and 7 cabinet positions instead of 1. He tells me that Nimba County played a pivotal role in Boakai's victory.
Well, Jimmy, before the election could start, Lofa people came to Bon County people to seek support from the Bon County people for Omen Boakai. The Bon County people also invited the Nimba elders. They brought chicken and kola nuts for a traditional ceremony, during which time the three counties took an oath to support Joseph Boakai all the way to victory. Unfortunately, when that traditional oath was taken and it went back to the respective counties, during the election, Lofa did not deliver first round, second round. It was terrible. The Bon County was taken over by President George Weah, but George Weah did not take Nimba. Nimba stood on ground firmly in support of Honorable Joseph Boakai and swallowed all the votes for the Southeastern region. Nimba, you know, is the electoral college in Liberia. Now, Omen Boakai said that each county will have first one ministerial position. That's what he said. Unfortunately, they have more positions for a certain portion of the people in Lofa. The Loma people are completely ostracized. They have no job. They are not considered. And we don't think that a great man, a great leader, a deacon, a father, a wise man that we trust and believe, we have somebody near him to do what is happening. And we think it is another way to go.
Senator Brent Johnson, as you said again, the president said at least there will be one ministerial position for each county. If you say you want 5 or more, some would say, well...
I'm saying, buddy, he said initially every county will have one ministerial position. Then after that, you will go around again. After that, you will deal with the deputy again. But considering the 15 counties, that was a very beautiful decision. But unfortunately, Grand Bassa got 4. The vote from Grand Bassa and the vote from Nimba, which is more higher. Nimba is the toughest one. It provided a huge chunk of votes. And you got 4, and up to now, we are still standing to know where we go. And Bombing that did not deliver more than Nimba has 3, and Lofa that did not deliver has 6 or 7. Where do we go, Jimmy?
Do you have the qualified people from Nimba County? Because some would say, well, this is entitlement that you're looking for.
No, you see, Jimmy, that would be wrong on part of anybody who says that. Nimba is the second largest county to Mesuraro. Second largest. And remember, the highest number of PhD in the Republic of Liberia is for Nimba. Do your statistic. The highest number of PhD for Nimba. The highest number of lawyers, they call barristers. They're for Nimba. We are educated. We are knowledgeable, we are wise and competent. And they consider all the recommendations we send. You'll find Dr. This one, Dr. Slavo, Dr. This, Dr. That. It was so many. But we cannot blame the old man. We are just saying it's a reawakening call for him to know that the coming men who appealed to us to provide the running mate to them and we refuse. Now he comes down to Joe Boakai that he once neglected for coming to become Minister of State and he's doing this process well. We just want to remind the woman that the man with him is not our friend, he's our political adversary.
That was Senator Prince Johnson of Liberia speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Allied Democratic Forces, ADF rebels, have allegedly carried out yet another attack in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The attack took place early Monday in the village of Mazia, Mombasa Territory. Reporter Al Katanti Sibeti Jaffa in the eastern DRC city of Goma says at least 11 farmers were killed.
Local authorities in Ituri province reported that the morning of this Monday, February 5th, armed men attacked the village of Manzia in the district of Mombasa and killed 11 people, wounded a lot of them, and some have been kidnapped. And this is still a provisional record because no one had already done any investigation on what happened today.
Jaffa, who are the perpetrators for these attacks?
Regarding the operating mode, and according to the local civil society in Ituri, the Islamist terrorist group ADF, affiliated to the Islamic State in DRC, is pointed to be the perpetrators of this horrible attack. But this region is still a land of different militia, such as Chinia Kilima, ADF, and other Maimai groups.
How are the authorities in the region responding to these attacks?
DRC authorities have recorded more than 20 ADF attacks this year. This shows that attacks against civilians are growing up this year more than last year. And this might be because of the joint operation between FRDC and UPDF against ADF in their zone, and this push ADF in response to attack people and kill in other villages.
That was reporter Jaffa Al-Katanti speaking with us from Goma, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 6th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema has directed the country's health ministry to offer formal employment to all individuals volunteering their services at cholera centers. He has also called on Zambians to unite and permanently eradicate the disease. Information Minister Cornelius Mwitwa tells me the president was rewarding the commitment of the volunteers during a visit to a cholera center.
The president, having visited the cholera center, I realize just how much, first of all, the dedication these volunteers have, that even when they have not been paid, they've been working at various health centers and now manning the cholera centers. Like they are now first responders to the cholera situation and also to put their lives on the line. So the president realized that beyond the sacrifice, they have done a lot, because right now cholera in Zambia is drastically skyrocketing downward. Numbers are going down drastically and quickly. And so to appreciate that measure of sacrifice that these health workers have put in place, the president, using his executive powers, directed the Ministry of Health to employ all those who were volunteering in the cholera centers as a way of saying thank you.
The opposition is saying, okay, what happens to all the other Zambians that need employment?
What is happening is that there is a clear roadmap of employment. Like I've shown you, that in the first year of his administration, 11,400 health workers were employed. In the second year, 3,500. In the third year, which is this year, another 3,500 plus. Now, that is just one stream, meaning that another year next year, 2025, there will be another set of health workers employed. But other sectors are equally catered for. In fact, the health sector has gotten a very little chunk of the employment. The education sector is the one that is leading in terms of beneficiation of these employments. In the first year, more than 32,000 teachers were employed in order to bridge the teacher-pupil ratio relationship, given the government policy of free education. Free meaning that the government is paying tuition fees for school-going children from grade 1 up to grade 12. That is the situation, and I think that the opposition, if they will question that, I think it is just because in a democracy, you can't sing from one song. And in a country like ours, with expanding democratic space, there will always be people who will want to comment at literally almost everything.
Minister, before I let you go, let me ask you, what do you say to those who say that, how does this address the underlying causes of the cholera situation? Because by employing these people does not eradicate cholera. How is your government dealing with that?
Well, first of all, the employment of volunteers has no direct relationship with dealing with the cholera situation in the country. That is already being dealt with by the processes and health measures that have been put in place. And that is why we are now hitting low numbers in terms of infections and also in terms of death. The numbers are really, really coming down.
Cornelius Mwitwa is the Zambian Information Minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. Community activists in Mozambique are using a mobile application to help tuberculosis patients get the medication they need and educate the public about the disease. As Victoria Amunga reports, some patients lack basic knowledge about the deadly illness.
Inesh Antonio, a resident of Mozambique's Morumbala district, recounts a period in 2022 when she got sick. She had a cough and a fever continuously for 3 months. She tried to get better by self-medicating on painkillers. She said she was weak and just sleeping. She could not manage to go to the farm to get vegetables and grow food for herself. Antonio says she continued to struggle until her condition got worse one night and she went to a healthcare facility. She was diagnosed with tuberculosis, began her treatment, and survived. Antonio is an exception. At least 14,000 people die from TB each year in Mozambique, according to the United Nations Stop TB Partnership. It's a challenge that communities are taking on. Using a mobile application, trained community activists are monitoring infected patients and sensitizing the public on TB. The app called One Impact is used in 26 countries around the world. It provides a data platform on which community advocates can feed information provided by patients about the problems they face, like lack of medication and community stigma. Users can also access information on how to prevent TB infection and interact with specialists. Piresh Paulino is the coordinator of Mozambique Local TB Response.
So when they are sharing this kind of barriers, the activists, they are registering through the app, which is there on phone. So these barriers are going to the dashboard. That dashboard where we have the case managers. The case manager, they can go through all of these barriers. Also, some of barriers they can solve.
One community activist, Joanne Matias, told VOA the campaign is enabling patients to speak up and receive care for TB.
Tanto na família despreza o paciente, não comia junto, não dormia junto.
Matias says many people explain their suffering because of barriers they face in completing the treatment. By using the One Impact app, he says they now know how to go to health facilities and learn about TB. Many African countries are struggling to contain and treat TB, which is fully preventable and curable, but often gets little attention. Mozambique authorities hope that with technologies such as One Impact app, more deaths from TB can be prevented. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
The latest wave of U.S. airstrikes in Iraq aimed at pounding targets associated with almost 170 attacks by Iranian-backed militias on U.S. forces in the region appears to be expanding the fissure between Washington and Baghdad. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden has the latest from the Pentagon.
Mourners in Baghdad and a funeral procession for militia members killed in Friday's U.S. airstrikes. Some calling for U.S. forces to leave the country now. The time has come, says Badr organization leader Hadi Al-Amiri. Some Iraqi government officials have echoed that call, angry Baghdad was not notified of the U.S. strikes in advance. the U.S. is pushing back.
Iraq, like every country in the region, understood that there would be a response after the deaths of our soldiers.
State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel.
We informed the Iraqis immediately after the strikes occurred.
And the Pentagon rejected Iraqi allegations that those killed were with the Iraqi security forces.
As we conduct these strikes, we are very focused on Iranian-backed proxy groups.
Major General Pat Ryder.
We're striking terrorist groups that are supported by the IRGC.
Ryder says Baghdad is a valued ally, adding the U.S. is not planning for a long-term military campaign against the militias in Iraq and Syria. Jeff Selden, VOA News, The Pentagon.
It's time now for our Black History Month and African History presentation for today, February 6th. This morning, instead of our regular daily facts, we'll be speaking with Melvin Fort, the founder and president of the Constituency for Africa. He has spent a large part of his life building bridges of understanding between Africa and African Americans, but most especially between Africa and the United States. Today, Melvin tells us his knowledge of Africa began as a young Peace Corps volunteer.
Well, you know, when I first got involved with Africa, I was in college out in Colorado. I'm from Illinois originally. I played basketball, so I wanted to see something different. And I said, let me go as far away from home as I can. And so I ended up in the mountains of Colorado, and there was just only a handful of blacks at that school. You know, we played basketball, and it's 200 miles southwest of Denver. Think about that, way up in the Rockies, 11,000-foot elevation. So, you know, I mean, for me, it was the first time away from home. My roommate was white, you know, first time ever really knowing a white person. And it was a shock for him, too, because it's the first time he ever knew a black person. But anyway, I started a column in the newspaper because this was in the late 60s, early 70s, during the time of the civil rights struggle. And I started a column in the newspaper called The Back of the Bus. So every week I wrote about black people. Martin Luther King was so-and-so, Malcolm X, blah, blah, blah. And so one day I got a message from a white guy who wanted to talk to me. And so we met in the student union for coffee. And come to find out, he had went to the Peace Corps. He fell in love with his girlfriend, his counterpart, who was from Ghana. And he wanted to marry her. And he wanted my opinion about interracial marriage. Well, I'm not a love doctor, you know, so I didn't have much to say about that. But what is this Peace Corps? So he told me about the Peace Corps. And I said, hey, I'd like to do something like that. I wanted to help black people, but I wasn't thinking about globally. So I put in my application, and I didn't hear anything back for like 6 months. And so I assumed nothing was going to happen, and I was just, you know, continue to make my plans to graduate. But I finally got a letter, and it said, you know, you have been accepted into the Peace Corps, and you're going to go to Ethiopia. Well, my first thought was, I thought Ethiopia was in the Middle East, because of the Bible story, Bethlehem, Jerusalem, Ethiopia. And so, you know, back then, no one knew anything about these countries. And so I finally, you know, you couldn't Google. You know, it wasn't like you could Google it like you can today. So I went to the library, found an atlas, and saw a map. And it showed me that Ethiopia was in the heart of Africa. So I graduated in June. And July, I'm headed to Ethiopia. My father said, boy, you're going to get eaten by a lion. Because we thought that lions were all over Africa, you know. And I didn't know. I really thought that Tarzan would be at the airport to meet us and take us to the village in a herd of elephants. Because all we knew about Africa was Tarzan, Idi Amin, you know, famine. So I went to Africa under those circumstances.
And that was Melvin Fort, founder and president of the Constituency for Africa. He was speaking with us from Washington. And that's it for this Tuesday, February 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.